Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. It's Friday morning, it's time, or Friday afternoon, depending on where you are in the country. Time for our regular first hour of our three-hour program, every Friday, the first hour of our program, our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us, the independent congressman from Vermont. He's the longest-serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives, currently running for the United States Senate as an independent from Vermont to fill the seat being vacated by Jim Jeffords. You can find out about his campaign at Bernie.org, Bernie.org, his website. Our telephone number, if you'd like to speak with Bernie Sanders, if you have questions, comments, complaints, concerns, considerations, whatever it may be, 866-440-8466. That's 866-440-TOM, T-H-O-M, 440-T-H-O-M. And, of course, if you'd like to drop into our live chat room, go to TomHartman.com, however you spell it, we'll get you there, and click the live chat link, and that'll drop you into our live chat room. Congressman Bernie Sanders, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Always great to have you, Bernie. I have an audio clip of you in Congress a day or so ago. I'd like to play that and just find out from you the follow-up on that. Can we do that? Okay, fire it off, Alex.
Here's my question. According to the 9/11 Commission, UAE top officials and royal family members associated with Osama bin Laden. Can you tell us absolutely that these very same people will not be running six major American ports in the United States? Can you tell me that?
I will pledge to get that information back to you, Mr. Sanders.
All right. Can anybody else tell me that we will know for a fact that some of these very same officials will not be running this company? I'm not hearing it. And to my mind, it is beyond comprehension that if you cannot answer that simple question, I cannot understand why we would go through with this transaction.
Now, Bernie, who are you interrogating there, and what was the follow-up to that?
Well, this was a hearing before the Financial Institutions Committee, and they were usually, in most cases, deputy secretaries from Homeland Security and various other government agencies. Now, what's interesting about this hearing in financial services is that most of the discussion was dealing with the trade issue. And it was an effort by the Republican leadership and the Bush administration to say, look, this transaction is important for our trade position. It is good that people are investing in America. It is good that American corporations are investing abroad. And if we kill this transaction, my goodness, it will be bad for our position vis-a-vis international trade.
In other words, it's good for business.
That's right. If it's good for business, it's good. And I must say that even some of the Republicans on the committee picked up and said, well, they think that trade is all that wonderful, but are we going to sacrifice national security for unfettered free trade? My point on that was the 9/11 Commission made it very clear that in 1999, the United States actually had its sights on Osama bin Laden. He was in a hunting camp in Afghanistan. They were ready to go after him with some missiles. And then it turned out an official government plane of the United Arab Emirates landed for a hunting trip with members of, as we understand it, the royal family and other government officials from the UAE to be going on a hunting trip with Osama bin Laden. Therefore, the missile strike was canceled.
Now, if only Dick Cheney had been on that hunting trip. Sorry, I couldn't.
So my simple question was, given the fact, and here's the point that I think maybe not everybody understands it. When you're talking about this company that would run the ports, this is not a private company located in the United Arab Emirates. This is the government of the United Arab Emirates. So you have high-ranking officials with a friendly relationship, personal relationship with Osama bin Laden, We don't know who those guys are. You don't even know that they may not even be running this company. That is beyond belief. Now, the good news, Tom, is I think in the Congress, so what I'm seeing, is you have a very broad cross-section of members of Congress with very different political ideologies, people like Duncan Hunter, who is a very conservative guy from California, who's head of the House Armed Forces Committee, has pledged to do everything he can to defeat this proposal. You have progressives. So I think you're seeing a coming together and to say that this is just a totally absurd idea.
Now, at the same time, in the news yesterday, there was a story in the New York Times, I believe it was, about how another Dubai company, I believe it's called Dubai Capital Holdings Limited. I don't have the story right in front of me. We did it yesterday on the program. Just is in the process of buying now the United States' largest manufacturer of military jet engines and tank engines.
Well,
I mean, it's just continuing.
Well, and I think the point that you and I discussed, I know you have written on this issue, I mean, in one sense, there is a silver lining and something positive about this huge controversy, because it is opening up an understanding on the part of the media and the American people to some very, very important and disastrous trends that are taking place in this country. Number one, to my mind, in defense of this president, I must confess that he is at least being intellectually consistent. President Bush believes in outsourcing. President Bush believes in unfettered free trade. President Bush believes it's just fine for American corporations to throw millions of American workers out on the street, move to China, and pay people 30 cents an hour. Now, if you hold that view, then you also consistently should believe that it is fine for foreign countries to own the United States of America. And Bush does. So for Bush, let's give him an A for intellectual consistency. Let's give him an F minus for appreciating the national security needs of the United States of America, to suggest that a country where leadership has personal relationship with Osama bin Laden should be running major ports in America is literally beyond comprehension. It doesn't pass the laugh test. The other point that is being raised around this whole controversy is, in fact, the reality that we have done a very, very poor job in terms of port security. There has been a lot of concern that one way terrorists could create real damage in the United States is by bringing whatever it might be, a nuclear weapon or whatever, in through our port.
There was a major motion picture made about this.
Right. I saw it. It was a pretty scary one.
Yeah.
Where they blew up the Super
Baltimore.
Bowl or something in Baltimore.
Yeah,
or
the Port of Baltimore. Yeah.
Yeah. And there is, I think, widespread understanding that the vast majority, over 90% of the containers that are coming into this country are, in fact, not inspected. Other countries are doing better. And the third issue, I think, that this whole controversy raises is our trade policy and the fact that we have a $700 billion trade deficit, that foreign countries have a whole lot of dollars, and they are investing big time in the United States.
Well, that's really the beginning point, isn't it? I mean, here we have, last year we bought $700 worth of largely, you know, junk from China. $200 billion of that trade deficit was just with China last year.
Right.
We buy all this junk from China so that Walmart can sell us cheap stuff and other big box retailers. And they're sitting on all this money. There's this huge imbalance.
Right.
What are they going to do with it? They got to buy us.
They're buying America.
Right.
And, you know, I think, and this again raises some very, very fundamental issues. Do any of us, do I believe that we build a wall around America? No. Do we think that trade is terrible? No, we don't. But what common sense suggests, what you want are trade policies which, A, protect the middle class of the United States of America. If they work well for the middle class, that's great. We want good trade policies. But we don't want to sell out American workers. Second of all, obviously, that as a nation, we know that we can't thrive. We can't survive if we destroy our manufacturing capabilities, which then takes us to the issue that you just raised about the second Dubai takeover, which is, do we even have the capability to defend ourselves militarily if more and more of the military equipment and the arms and the weapons that our soldiers require are being made abroad or by, are being made by other countries? And the answer is, national security people are very concerned about that as well.
And then on top of this, today in India, Bush, this from the New York Times, Bush says, and I quote, people do lose jobs as a result of globalization, and it's painful for those who lose jobs, but globalization provides great opportunities. By opportunities, I assume he's talking about his buddies, the multimillionaire CEOs.
They do. The CEOs of this country now earn 400 times what their workers make. The gap between the very, very rich and everybody else is growing exponentially. So for his friends, you know, this guy is really an isolated human being. He surrounds himself with his wealthy campaign contributors, and they are, in fact, doing very well. And I think he has the perception that this is what is going on in America, when, in fact, the very opposite is the reality.
Yeah, this is out of touch raised to an art form.
Yes.
We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment here on the Tom Hartman radio program, 16 minutes past the hour. Our telephone number, 866-440-8466. If you'd like to speak with Bernie, we'll be back with your calls and comments right after this, right here on the True People's Radio.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
This is the land of the free and the home of the brave. But George Bush doesn't think that way. He'd rather lead with everyone afraid than handle things the American way. But fear didn't make America great. Fear didn't make America great.
And welcome back, my friends. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The Tom Hartman radio program. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. And Bernie, our server, the teleserver to our telephone lines here has gone absolutely flaky. So we may or may not, we're going to try. Line 4, Orangeman in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hopefully you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Okay, I have a question for Bernie. As Bernie, when are you and your friends and congressmen to get together and rein in this military monster that we have right now? Because if we cut the funding for the military, then there's no money to have wars, and you can bring these troops back home and secure the borders and the ports, because there's never going to be peace with the Arabs in the Middle East. And furthermore, we were only attacked from within, and we could never be attacked from outside because of all the sophisticated weaponry we have in outer space, so Mr. Reagan said. But I believe, and then when that happens, when you lead that charge, you'll be the next president, and hopefully this is going to change. This country will live from now on, and then hopefully we'll get back to where we used to be.
Well, I'm not quite looking to be the next president. I would like to be the senator from Vermont. That would be a very good thing. I think clearly what we need to be doing is changing our foreign policy very, very substantially. Are we spending too much on the military? We probably are right now. In many ways, we're still fighting the Cold War with the Soviet Union. We are not focused, to my mind, anywhere near where we should be in fighting what our real enemy now is, and that is international terrorism, and putting our energies and our resources into that. Furthermore, one of the really disconcerting aspects of what Bush is doing is, Tom, if you look at international polls about how the rest of the world feels about the United States and this president, it is really frightening. Whether it is first world countries, whether it is third world countries, the kind of respect that we now have has declined very substantially from where we were in the past. And that is bad news for this country. So I think the answer is we've got to work with the entire international community to have a sensible effort to fight international terrorism. That is military, that is non-military, and we have to end the kind of isolation that now exists.
Thank you, Bernie, and thanks for that call. Terrell in Grand Rapids, Michigan, is it, I believe?
Yes.
Hey, Terrell, welcome to the program.
Yeah, you know, I have a comment and a question. I guess my comment would be that I feel, as an American citizen, just so helpless. So that the president is going to press forth with his personal agenda, regardless of what the Americans say, and I feel like we're completely headed towards a dictatorship with this administration, and I just feel so helpless. I mean, you talk about national security, you talk about these deals we're making with the Arabs, and common sense would tell you they're just not, it's not good policy to do these things. And the lies that come out of this administration, every time I listen to the news, it just makes me feel so frustrated. And I even feel that even writing my congressman or senator, it's just not going to do anything. It's just falling on deaf ears when it reaches the White House.
Okay. Your name is Carl?
Terrell.
Terrell. All right. Carl, you raise, I think the point that you raise is a view that is shared by millions and millions of Americans. And among other reasons, that's why we have such a low voter turnout. I think what we have to do is be very bold in our thinking and energize the American people at the grassroots level to really have a political revolution, to do things that we have not done in the past, to start having meetings, bringing people together to talk about the real issues, and then tell members of Congress, mayors, senators, that you want them to be coming to these meetings. You want them to be responding to the real issues that you are raising. And it's not just this recent absurd deal with Dubai. It is a disintegrating healthcare system, and why we are the only country in the industrialized world that doesn't guarantee healthcare to all people. It's the growing gap between the rich and the poor. It is our disastrous environmental policies, and the fact that this administration is one of the few remaining large institutions in America, in the world, that does not understand what global warming is about, and on it goes. But what I'm suggesting is we need a radical change in our political culture. People have got to be talking about these issues. When people get organized, when they get educated, amazing, amazing things happen, and they can happen pretty quickly. So please, do not give up. Do not become cynical. That is exactly what Karl Rove and George Bush and these folks want you to do.
What you're really talking about, Bernie, is translate that emotion, which Terrell is describing as frustration, translate that into action.
Absolutely. And you know what? It's fun. Bringing people together to talk about problems and how we solve problems and how we change the dynamics of politics in America is an exciting and important thing to do, not only for us, but for our children as well. So my message is, please don't give up. That is exactly what they want. They want politics to be wealthy people buying elections and controlling our economy and our media. We can't allow them to do that.
That's not democracy. It's not what the founders fought and died for. It's just absolutely not. 27 minutes past the hour. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Bernie.org, his website. And I strongly recommend you check it out. Always great news and information there, as well as information about his candidacy for the Senate. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 866-440-8466. We'll be right back.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Day by day, I hear the voices rising, starting with a whisper like it did before.
And welcome back. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us, Bernie.org, his website, our telephone number, 866-440-THOM, 440-8466, if you'd like to call in. And, Bernie, we have Jim in Pittsburgh on the line. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom. Congressman, I would like you to ask this on the floor the next time you're there. Would Israel allow the Germans to guard their port, being that, we had the Holocaust and the Second World War? Would India let Pakistan guard their ports? Would Japan let China guard theirs, or Japan and China? And most of all, would any Arab country let the U.S. guard their ports? I heard some news on the air this morning. I almost fainted. It was Japanese and Chinese baseball scores. Now, the reason it alarmed me is just previously I heard about India asking Americans to come to India to work for their $2 an hour jobs, and there's a...
Well, Jim, you raise the right question, and I think what you're seeing here in Congress, regardless of one's political ideology, is the understanding that you're not even dealing with a private company, you are dealing with a foreign government. Now in the midst of a major national security issue, and in this case, a foreign government, which we believe has, whose leaders have had ties with Osama bin Laden. So to answer Jim's question, no, it makes no sense to me, and I think it makes no sense to a majority of the members of Congress. And you know what? I don't think this deal is going to go through.
That's interesting.
Now,
that's,
I may be wrong on this,
yeah,
but I think if you have the chairman of the Armed Forces Committee, conservatives, progressives, many Republicans, many Democrats, myself, speaking out against it and saying, we're not supporting it, you know, and the American people certainly are saying exactly what Jim is saying, you know, I wouldn't bet that this deal is going to go through.
Well, right now, Bernie, we've got P&O actually owns these port facilities in the United States. I mean, they don't own the land underneath them. That's leased to them. But they own the port facilities, all the equipment,
right,
the warehouses and everything. And my understanding is that either today or Monday, this deal is closing. So,
well, it may close, but it can unclose as well. I mean, Congress can pass legislation prohibiting this.
Yeah, so, well, aren't we then essentially going to have to be in a position where we go to Dubai Ports World and say, you can't run our ports, so we're going to have to buy them from you?
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
No, I think you've got your national security
interesting
aspect.
Yeah, interesting to see how this works out. Don in Lodi, California, you're on the line with Bernie Sanders. Hey, Don.
In fact, just by reading the paperwork, the foreign government can find everything that goes in and out of the port, including military. And then there's the Carlyle Group, Snow, Daddy Bush. Where are the ethics and conflicts of interest? It's just goes on and on. But they're just trying to make money regardless of security.
Well, Don raises another issue, and that is, I know, Tom, you're familiar with this issue, and that is that the Bush family itself, I mean, a lot of aspects to this transaction. I mean, as we mentioned a moment ago, it's certainly national security, it's certainly our trade policy, it's certainly the fact that with our trade deficit, more and more of America is being bought out. But in this particular case, it does raise interesting questions about the Bush family. It's not just President Bush, but his father, other members of the family, and their relationship to the monarchies of the Middle East, which has been longstanding, gone back for many, many decades. And it's an interesting area to pursue.
You know what I find most mind-boggling, Bernie, is during World War II, Harry Truman was a senator. He was a United States senator.
From Missouri.
Yeah, you were exactly. He was a Democrat. And he got up and he said, I want to find out if there's war profiteering going on. And he created basically his own, it came to be known as the Truman Commission. He traveled thousands of miles, visited hundreds of defense facilities, had at one point several hundred people working for him on this thing, uncovered millions of dollars in fraud and corruption. People went to jail over this. Some companies shut down. Others lost government contracts. And in response to that, the President of the United States, Franklin Roosevelt, made Harry Truman his vice president the next time around.
Right.
Now, can you imagine if a senator was to start seriously looking into the corruption that's going on right now with all of these crony companies? Do you think that the George Bush would reward that senator? I mean,
irony is that the vice president today is the guy who used to be the CEO of Halliburton,
yeah,
a company which has received billions and billions of dollars of non-bid contracts. That's the reality today.
Yeah. Joe in Columbia, South Carolina, you're on the line with Bernie Sanders.
Say about four things, then I'll hang up and listen. I'd like to know when we're going to get tariffs back.
When we're going to get what?
Tariffs.
Tariffs, okay.
And I'd like to know, I would like to see all foreign companies out of our ports, and I'd like to know when we're going to get out of Iraq, and I kind of like the word America over homeland.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, and I'll listen to what you got to say.
All right. Joe raised a number of questions. In terms of tariffs, a growing number of Americans, I certainly, and I think more and more members of Congress, understand that our current trade policies, permanent normal trade relations with China, NAFTA, World Trade Organization, have been a disaster for the middle class of this country. They need to be fundamentally revised. And by that, of course, we mean tariffs. It is not acceptable that companies throw American workers out on the street, go to China, hire people for 30 cents an hour, bring their product back into the United States. So fundamentally, we have got to change our trade policies. They're not working. In terms of foreign corporations owning ports, I think Joe makes an important point, and I think you're probably going to see legislation, which I would support, that says that foreign governments cannot own ports in the United States and other parts of our infrastructure, which are important for national security. In terms of Iraq, I voted against the war. My view is that our presence in Iraq today is counterproductive in taking on Islamic fundamentalism and international terrorism. I think we've got to bring our troops home as soon as possible. We can bring many of them home within the next 6 months, certainly almost all of them within the next year. What is happening in Iraq today is very, very, very frightening. This country is on the verge of a civil war. Thousands of Iraqi innocent people are being killed. If that civil war develops, it impacts not only Iraq, but the entire region, and God only knows what will happen there. Interestingly, Tom, you may have seen a poll, I think it was done by Zogby, which indicates that a strong majority of our troops in Iraq now think it's a good idea to start bringing the troops.
72% said come home within a year. 29% said come home immediately. The other thing that was not in the newspaper that I got from actually reading that poll was that between 85 and 90% of our troops think that they're in Iraq because Saddam Hussein was responsible for 9/11.
Well, you know, there was...
Where are they getting this idea? Is this Armed Forces Radio?
Well, there was another poll that came out recently which still has 29% of the American people believing that Iraq and Saddam Hussein were responsible for 9/11. I mean, that just raises a whole other area. How do people, when you have the President of the United States acknowledging that that's not the case, when nobody defends that proposition, and yet 29% of the American people think that Saddam Hussein was responsible or involved in 9/11, that's a frightening situation. That takes us back to the media. That takes us back to a lack of political consciousness in this country, which is very, very dangerous. I mean, one could understand, if you believe that Iraq and Saddam Hussein were involved in 9/11, that would give you a very different perception of the war and the world, correct?
Absolutely, absolutely. Jim in Monroe, Washington. Hey, Jim, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Very much, and I'd like to ask Congressman Sanders, when are the Democrats going to start standing up and saying in the same voice, speaking together as a group, that we need free and fair elections, we don't need any more debacles like Florida and Ohio, that we need protections for the middle class, that we need medical that all people can afford? When is that going to start happening?
Well, you know, I'm not a Democrat, Jim. I'm an independent, and one of the reasons that I'm an independent is I just have not had the confidence that the Democrats were strong enough on issues reflecting the needs of the middle class and working families. And I think what you have right now, and people like Harry Reid in the Senate, Nancy Pelosi in the House of Representatives have got to deal with, is you've got a lot of people with very different points of view. It's like herding cats, and they have to somehow try to put this together. My own view has always been is that if people stand up and they say, look, I am on the side of the middle class. Healthcare is a right of all people. We're going to end this disastrous trade policy. We're going to take on big oil and the big pharmaceutical industry. We're going to make government work for all people. And even if we have to take on these big, powerful, special interest groups, we're going to do that. I think if you're prepared to do that, you know what? I think ordinary Americans are going to start standing up and say, hey, that's good. I'm going to get involved in the political process. There is a real difference between the Democratic and the Republican Party. Now, I know, obviously, you know, all the members of the Democratic Party here in the House of Representatives, and you have some great, great members. People are working 60, 70 hours a week on behalf of working families. On the other hand, the truth is you have some guys and women who may not be terribly different from Republicans. And that's an issue that the Democrats have got to work out and make sure that they can become a party that stands up strongly for ordinary people and is prepared to take on the big money interests that have so much power over our country.
Some of this also has to do with our campaign problems, doesn't it? Our, you know, the whole issue of campaign financing.
Absolutely.
And how our elections
Absolutely. So long as, you know, and Vermont is involved in a Supreme Court case just on this issue. So long, what we're seeing in my state, in my election, but all over this country, is millionaires, multimillionaires saying, I'm going to run for office. And then those people who are not millionaires are dependent upon big money to get elected. Unless we change that, you're not going to have a vibrant democracy or a government that represents ordinary people.
Well said. Congressman Bernie Sanders is with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. His website, bernie.org, www.bernie.org. Our telephone number, 866-440-8466. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, the True People's Radio, 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back, my friends. 9.5 minutes before the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program.
That's quite a song there,
though. It is quite a song, isn't it? It's some great pastiche music. You know, tough times produce the creative best in Americans, you know, I got to say. Bernie, it's our Bernie Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders here with us. Bernie, I just got a question from somebody in our chat room that I thought was a really germane one. Gail in Seattle points out that in the 70s, when we stood up with Israel in a position that there was this war, you know, this position that the Arab countries didn't like, they shut off our oil. And that led to an incredible crisis in the United States, you know, the oil crisis of, I think it was 72. And her question is, if they control our ports and we get into a similar situation where we do something that offends them or that upsets them or Israel does for that matter, they could shut down our ports. And that would even more severely disable the United States than losing the 15% or so of our oil that we were getting from the Middle East, would it not?
I think Gail makes a very good point. And actually it's a point I think I haven't heard discussed publicly here. But the bottom line is giving control over our ports and our national security to, at best, an unreliable government makes zero sense at all. But I think Gail raises a very interesting question.
Yeah, well said. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Jim in Columbus, I'm sorry, that's a different line. George in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Hey, George, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Yes, good day, Tom and Congressman Sanders. What I need to say, it's going to be a little bit tricky for me to develop. Let me just start off by saying that I consider myself a progressive, a liberal. I'm on MoveOn.org's emailing list. But having said that, this deal with the port, if this was an issue about whether these services should be privatized or they should be run by the government, I would definitely be against this deal. But having said that, I mean, I believe this company is a world-class organization. It's a reputable company, and I would hate to see us progressives jump in the bandwagon of the xenophobia of the right and look at it like a window of opportunity to weaken the president, which I understand, how politics works, but I would hate to think that, because we're bringing up the word Arab, and a whole lot of words that I'm not feeling comfortable with.
Good.
I mean,
George, you raise a very good and fair point. I personally, and I think many people who are very worried and disagree with this transaction, are not anti-Arab. We are internationalist. It would be an outrage if one opposed this agreement because one was anti-Arab. What the issue here is that we are spending billions of dollars trying to protect our national security. Is this a good transaction for our national security? And I think, George, the answer is almost any way you look at it, it simply is not. If it wasn't an Arab country, if it was another country, and we knew that that country's leaders were in contact or had personal relations with somebody who had attacked the United States, would we go through with that transaction?
In other words, if the royal family of Denmark had been on a hunting expedition with Osama bin Laden, and then a company out of Copenhagen that happened to be owned by the royal family of Denmark wanted to buy our ports,
exactly,
we'd be saying, no, don't think we don't. Well,
but the caller makes a good point.
Yeah.
I mean, we can't get into xenophobia. We cannot get into anti-Arab. Racism and all of that crap is not acceptable. But protecting our national security in a common-sense way is certainly something that we have to. But I appreciate the call. You raised some important issues, but I think from simply a simple national security analysis, this is a very, very bad transaction.
Mark in Stafford, Virginia. You're live with Bernie Sanders.
How you doing, Congressman?
Hey, Mark.
I've got a
I was telling the screener, I think it's time to get off the bashing of the Bush, you know, and because, you know, he's a fact of life. I mean, I could bash Alfred E. Bush with the best of them, but, you know, so say even you get rid of him and impeach him or something like that, you wind up with an even worse snake in the office than he is, you know. My problem is, and you know, what I see as immediate problem is we got to start concentrating on these upcoming elections.
That's right.
Too many people talking about it, but you know, we got to drag some of these conservatives that've been supporting all this crap that Bush has been shoving down our throat, you know, and they're just rubber stamping it and passing it right on through, you know. And if we don't get rid of them, we're going to get more of the same.
You got it, Mark. You know? You hit it right on the head. That's exactly right. I think this call for impeachment makes no sense. We can't even get investigations, let alone impeachment. If you impeach Bush, you got the wonderful vice president as president. What we have got to do, and Mark is absolutely 100% right, we have national elections coming up in November. There is a good chance that we can take back the House of Representatives and the United States Senate. But people are going to have to work hard, do a lot of door-to-door knocking, a lot of educating to do that. There are a lot of conservatives, people who had voted for George Bush, who now understand that he is one of the worst presidents in the modern history of America. They do not want Republicans to continue to control the House, the Senate, the White House, the Supreme Court. People are sick and tired of one-party government. They want to change. And Mark is right. We have got to focus our attention on these elections. And if we do that, man, we can bring some real changes, long overdue changes, to our country.
Yeah, it's just going to take some work. It's going to take people getting out there and getting involved. Congressman Bernie Sanders, his website, bernie.org, running for the United States Senate as an independent from Vermont, the longest-serving member of the House of Representatives as an independent, and a remarkable man. Bernie, thanks so much for being with us today.
Good to be with you, Tom. Thank you.
Always great talking with you. Coming up here in the program, there is just so much. I've got to tell you what's going on in Antarctica. The Domino's founder is having second thoughts about his little community, making every vote count in America. That and more right after the news. It's 57 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Richard Perodsky is currently the director of media studies at NYCOM at NYIT. He was formerly the director of broadcasting at LIU's CW Post Campus. And Richard, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Tom.
You're concerned that talk radio is demagoguery, if I'm reading your op-ed here correctly. Is that your take on this?
I'm afraid so, and really from both sides of the political spectrum. There just seems to be a desire, I guess perhaps based on the success of people like Rush Limbaugh, to present information in this way, and it's really a disservice.
Why?
Well, if you're going to make a reasoned, thoughtful, informed decision, how do you want to do that? Do you want to do it by somebody who's got you all fired up using the demagogic tricks of the trade, or do you want to do it by looking over some objective facts?
But, Richard, I'm assuming you're sufficiently a student of history to have at least have some familiarity with the newspapers from the 18th century and the 19th century.
Oh, the yellow journalism, of course.
Well, I'm not talking about even yellow journalism. I mean, back before then, I look at the newspapers back in the times during the day when John Adams and Thomas Jefferson were president. John Adams was so incensed about the media that he got passed in 1798, the Alien and Sedition Act, and even before it was signed, he threw Ben Franklin's grandson, Benjamin Franklin Bach, into prison, you know, a day before he had the legal authority to, for writing in his newspaper that Adams was old, toothless, querulous, and balding.
Well, Tom, I'm certainly not arguing that this is a current phenomenon. I'm just saying that this particular medium now, more so than in the past. How would you compare, say, radio in the 1940s and 50s when people like Murrow were setting the standards as opposed to now and the information you could get from the radio at either time?
Well, I didn't work in the radio in the 40s and 50s, but I did work in radio in the 60s and 70s, and when we had the Fairness Doctrine. And I did news for 7 years, in fact, in the late 60s and early 70s. And the radio station on which I did news for those 7 years had an afternoon talk show. And because of the Fairness Doctrine, we were terrified to talk about anything political. So basically, the afternoon talk show became, now this was a local station in central Michigan, in Lansing, Michigan, but the local talk show became what's going on at the Garden Society today. And let's talk to the director of Parks and Recreation. And there was no politics discussed. And frankly, I don't think that was serving the people of Lansing any better than, on the other hand, demagoguery by, if I'm pronouncing it right, by either me or Rush Limbaugh.
No, I'm not saying that we need to go back to the Fairness Doctrine, certainly not. But by the same token, there is a way of presenting factual information in an unbiased, reasonably objective manner. And clearly that doesn't seem to be the desire of virtually anybody.
So, I mean, TASS and Pravda said that they were presenting factual information in an unbiased manner.
And so does Fox News.
And so does Fox News. And for that matter, so does CBS, NBC, and ABC, and MSNBC. And, I mean, all of them. Everybody is saying, oh, our information is factual and unbiased. And everybody has got somebody else pointing at them going, ain't so! You know, I mean, whether it's accuracy in media, yelling about the mainstream media, you know, with old Cliff, what's his name out there, or whether it's fairness and accuracy in reporting, pointing out the right-wing bias of the mainstream media. What sort of mechanism would you put in place to try and regulate talk radio? Or do you want to just forbid it?
Oh, not at all. Not at all. I'm really not so sure, especially when we consider the cherished value of free speech, that we really want to put some kind of mechanism in place to stop it or regulate it. I think the most important thing is, now that we're in the information age, we want to be smart consumers in the information marketplace and the marketplace of ideas. The first law of consumerism is caveat emptor. I think the best thing we could possibly do is to make sure that people are well aware of being able to distinguish between fact and demagoguery, and not to assume that just because you're all hot up about an issue that you're informed about it.
Well, in order to do that, really then what we're talking about is, let's go back to our public education system and start teaching civics and start teaching American history again, and consider those as important things to teach, rather than just all this hysteria about science and math because we've got to compete with the rest of the world. Oh, gee, and then once you graduate with a degree in science or math, never mind, we found somebody in India who can do it cheaper.
Well, to be sure, we certainly need a more balanced approach in terms of our – we do have to prioritize to some degree, but we do need a balanced approach in public education. But
I mean, you can't help
– this is something that the parents can do as well.
But you see, you keep tossing it back on the consumers. This is really very much, it sounds to me, like a blame the victim thing. I mean, you've got American consumers who can't separate fact from fiction, if that's what you're suggesting. And the polls indicate that that may well be the case. I mean, 29% of Americans right now believe Saddam Hussein had personal contact with and directed the flying of airplanes into the 9/11 towers, which even the President of the United States has come out and said, you know, that there's absolutely no connection. Even Bush here, George W. Bush.
We've got no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with the September the 11th.
Yeah. We've got no evidence. And yet 29% of Americans believe this. So obviously we've got a disconnect. We've got a breakdown here of some kind. And it seems to me that a large part of that has to do with the fact that we're not teaching critical thinking skills. We're not teaching history in our schools and in our public education systems. And that perhaps there's not a diversity of voices, although I think, frankly, that the rise of Air America Radio and Progressive Talk Radio is starting to produce that diversity. I mean, if you go back to Father Coughlin in the 30s, I've listened to hours of Father Coughlin in the old archives, and this guy started out, he was pro-Roosevelt, all that kind of thing, and then Roosevelt started going the direction he went, and Father Coughlin turned on him, started yelling, you know, that Social Security was going to be the ruin of America, and then as he got older, and a lot of people think started getting Alzheimer's, turned into this screaming anti-Semite through the late 30s, to the point where his own Catholic Church basically pulled him off the air. But the American people, I mean, in his early days, 30 million people were listening to him. That was a third of the population of America. By the end, he was dying off. So isn't there a certain element of the marketplace in all this?
Well, to some degree, Tom, but I just... You told a lot about Father Coughlin, and he is the subject of my book, The Demigod, and I would like to correct just a few things that you said about him. One is, yeah, he had tremendous reach. It might have been 30 million. There are some reports that it was close to 50 million people tuning in each week to hear him.
And this was when the population in the United States was only 100 million.
125 million, exactly.
Okay, 125.
Exactly. With regard to his, and one of the reasons why he's the perfect subject to talk about demagoguery is the politics really didn't mean anything to him. And for the true demagogue, it usually doesn't. Basically, he was trying to appear to be leading the parade, and he didn't really care which direction the parade was marching.
Interesting. So, Father Claude, so in your book, The Demagogue, you're suggesting that the dangerous talk show hosts are the ones who basically are nuts. I mean, they literally are demagogues, gods, and they're, okay, I get that. But on the other hand, you've got folks like Limbaugh, for example. Whatever the Republican Party wants, he'll change his philosophy to agree with as time goes on. You've got so-called liberal talk show hosts, whatever the Democratic Party wants, they'll change their philosophy to go along with. Do you consider that demagoguery?
Well, I...
Or demagoguery?
I consider demagoguery the use of specific tricks, or in general, if you try to persuade someone by appealing to their emotions, appealing to their prejudices, appealing to their fears, and not giving them objective information,
Then by that definition, is not the Bush and Cheney administration demagogues?
There are many administrations that have been very demagogic.
Woodrow Wilson as well, if you want to attack a Democrat.
Oh, or Franklin Roosevelt. There's a perception today.
How was Roosevelt a demagogue?
Well, I'll give you a perfect example. There's a perception today that the word liberal is a pejorative. Some people run from it. The conservative talk show hosts, just to demonize somebody, will call them a liberal, and it seems to work. Well, back in the 1930s, if you listen to some of President Roosevelt's speeches, he uses the term conservative in exactly the same way, and for very similar reasons.
But the conservatives were fighting him tooth and nail. I mean, they were fighting Social Security, they were fighting labor protections. Wasn't that simply calling what is?
Well, not necessarily, because the specific statement I recall from one speech was that when the New Deal was not working as quickly as everyone hoped, and FDR was trying to allay their fears and to say we need more time, he said you have to remember it was all the conservative policies of the Hoover administration that caused the Depression. Well,
that was true.
Well, but don't you think it's a bit simplistic?
No, I really don't. Herbert Hoover passed, six massive tax cuts for the wealthy right in a row there in the last 4 years?
Yeah, and he also signed Smoot-Hawley.
Well, that was after the Depression happened. I mean, he was trying to pull us out of it.
But Tom, wouldn't you also go back to the Coolidge administration, to the Harding administration?
Yes, to a whole series of Republican administrations.
Wouldn't you say that the bank failures were very...
I think so. Richard, I'm sorry we're out of time. Richard Perotsky, his book, The Demagogue. If you want to find more information about it, it's great reading. 16 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
The grass was greener. The life was brighter. With friends around us. The nights of wonder.
And welcome back for your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 21 minutes past the hour. Alan Ratner is with us with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com in Washington, D.C. Hey, Alan, what's happening in the belly of the beast there?
Okay, well, it's interesting. I guess I'll start out with the U.S. Geological Survey. Today they said that pesticides have been linked to cancer and birth defects and neurological disorders, et cetera. Contaminate almost all of the country's rivers and streams and most of the fish found in them. But they said it's not in concentrations likely to affect people. Well, I'll tell you, I went off chicken and of course I went off turkey because I have a pet turkey and haven't eaten beef in years, but I ate fish And my mercury level went up to 25, which is beyond, beyond, beyond.
Really?
So I had to stop eating fish.
Whoa.
And actually, I then switched back to chicken because of my eye thing and everything. But
yeah.
I'll tell you, I mean, this is very, very concerned. And
were you eating a lot of tuna fish?
What?
Were you eating a lot of
no,
tuna fish?
No, I was eating like normal fish.
Huh.
You know, like trout and this is and that. And my level still went up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's, okay.
And what he said the use of pesticides has resulted in a wide range of benefits to control weeds and insects and increase food production, but it also raises question about their effects on the environment, including water quality.
Right. Plus, we know that, you know, good organic agricultural processes actually produce more crops. They produce healthier soil. They produce a longer term ability of the soil to produce good food, but they're not as profitable over the short term, quarter to quarter. So the big corporate agribusinesses, get in bed with the big pesticide companies, and then you've got one out of three Americans getting cancer sometime in their lifetimes.
Exactly. A couple other interesting things. One is that Mr. Brown, i.e. Brownie, was this morning on CNN, and he basically said that he thought that Secretary Chertoff should step down because he said he did not grasp the needs to be done. He said he let FEMA be torn apart. He sent him to Baton Rouge to sit in a chair instead of being where the action was. But he would not really go after President Bush.
Yeah, well, who wants to take on the mafia? You know?
Right. But it is interesting that he absolutely went after Chertoff.
Yeah.
Also, the president today, of course, is in India, or is just about going on to Pakistan. He's left today. I think he's in Pakistan as we speak. But there is this nuclear agreement, and they signed it on the trip, but a lot of people are saying that if it does not get signed, it does not get past the Senate. Then it will be politically damaging both to Bush and to the Indian.
Our relationship with India.
That's right.
Now, in a way, aren't we basically saying to India, okay, you guys, you broke the law, you broke the rules, you made nuclear bombs in secret, you told the world.
And we're going to reward you with it,
and
you can build a super breeder reactor.
Right, and so here's your reward. I mean, isn't that kind of the wrong message to be sending to the world at the same time that we're trying to gin up a war with Iran?
Going to give permission to Iran to do exactly what they want.
Yeah. Huh. I'm just as, you know, the word tin ear is not even close to being appropriate any longer to describe what's going on with these guys politically. But my guess is, Ellen, that somewhere in the back of this deal with India and this whole signing of this nuclear deal so that they can build a fast breeder reactor is probably Bechtel or Halliburton or some big defense contractor, General Electric, some big defense contractor that makes large contributions to the Republican Party.
Well,
or some large nuclear company.
I mean, I'm wondering why people haven't really shown more of a Bush family association, maybe with a father, with Dubai Ports.
Yeah. Well, and you mean the Carlyle Group and all that?
Secretary Snow.
Say that again?
There certainly was with Secretary Snow.
Right. Yeah. Well, he was associated with that, and then there's the Carlyle Group and all this sort of thing. One of the issues raised in the last hour of our program was that in the 70s, when the Arabs did not like our support of Israel in the Six-Day War, they cut off our supply of oil, producing the oil crisis of the early 70s. If they control our ports, what if we behave in a way that they don't like and they decide to cut off our ports? Then we'd really be toast. That's a question I would love to hear somebody ask in the daily press briefing there in the White House.
For sure. It's going to be pretty interesting. The other thing that is coming up is next week the House is going to be voting on the revised Patriot Act. And not sure whether that's happening Tuesday or Wednesday. I think there will be some debate on that, but that definitely happens next week. Also, there is a child safety bill up in the House that protects children against pedophiles. I'm not sure exactly what that is going to mean, but it would allow schools to know whether teachers have criminal backgrounds as well. And then there's a food labeling bill that is going to be happening also next week.
That is very dangerous, this bill. It's going to wipe out the ability of states to control the quality and labeling of foods in their states. It's not a good thing at all. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thanks, Ellen.
Thank you.
Good talking with you. 27 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman radio program, Viagra for your brain.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
It's a really great day to sidestep nations who just get in the way because their people have too much of a say. But boys, we have got the answer. Free trade. It sounds really good. It spells freedom for the corporate brotherhood. And you need us in your neighborhood with new global employers. Oh, honey, let's join the WTO. Make lots of money at the WTO.
Yes. Welcome back, my friends. 34 minutes past the hour. Coming up on 25 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-440-8466, our phone number. Our chat room, our live chat room at TomHartman.com. Drop in, say hi. We'll be getting to your calls in just a moment. But first, it's time for a conservative alert. Yes, indeed, State Senator, California State Senator Joe Dunn of Garden Grove, a good Democrat, is looking into what are the cons up to now as the California National Guard under Schwarzenegger engaged in domestic spying. Turns out that it looks like the Peninsula chapter of the Raging Grannies is being snooped on by the State National Guard. Joe Dunn wants to know, is this what's going on? It was a Mother's Day rally against the Iraq war at the state capitol that seemed to spark the proposed ban on domestic spying. The Guard has said its two-person surveillance team was used to monitor news reports of the protest, not to spy. Amid pressure, however, that unit was disbanded months later. And today a Guard spokesman said the state ban is not necessary. However, a hard drive with key information was mysteriously erased, and the boxes and boxes of National Guard documents subpoenaed have large sections blacked out because of confidentiality concerns. Senator Dunn says one file shows at least 10 other states could be coming to a state near you are also engaged in domestic spying, said Gail Srednanovic of the Raging Grannies. It is very dangerous. This sets a very dangerous precedent. Well, you've got, on the one hand, the National Guard looking into the Raging Grannies. On the other hand, Saeed Rahmatullah Hashemi, the former ambassador at large for the Taliban, the guy who told a reporter back when the Taliban was running Afghanistan that it was his mission to explain the regime's decision to rid the country of 2,000-year-old towering statues of Buddha carved out of rock 90 miles from Kabul. Remember this when they blew these things up? These are considered the greatest remaining examples of 3rd and 5th century Greco-Indian art in the world, archaeological treasures. Taliban leader Mullah Omar ordered them destroyed, calling them idols of infidels and repugnant to Islam. Well, the guy who was the official spokesman for the Taliban, saying, and I quote, "When the world destroys the future of our children with economic sanctions, they have no right to worry about our past," end quote. Thus, we can just blow up these ancient statues. That guy got a U.S. student visa, and he's studying at Yale. So, let's see. Raging Grannies, bad. Taliban spokesman, good. You tell me that the Bush administration doesn't have a little bit of a problem. Hey, just a little bit of a problem. Well, in fact, Brigadier General Robert L. Casen, the Pentagon's deputy director for the war on terrorism, told the Mooney Washington Times arguably the most right-wing newspaper in Washington, D.C., the only one that George W. Bush will read on those rare occasions when he actually does read a newspaper. Speaking of the terrorists in the Middle East, he said, and I quote, "We are not killing them faster than they are being created," end quote. And by created, I don't think he was talking about procreation. This wasn't a pro-birth control lecture. What he was pointing out, and this was at the Woodrow Wilson Center yesterday, a gathering there, he's saying that the war could take decades to resolve. This is from the Washington Times. At the same time that George W. Bush is running around going, "Where are women? The war on terror!" At the same time that Bush is doing that, the guy who's in charge of the war on terrorism says, "No, sorry. It looks like the Bush policies are creating more terrorists than they're doing away with." 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number, Dick in Dayton, Ohio. Hey, Dick, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Tom?
I am great, but I'll get better. Dick, how about you?
Tom, your guests are number one. I learned so much from them. They're great.
Well, thank you.
And I want to say something about Congressman Bernie about those ports. You got my support for him, and, you know, from Ohio here, my aunt lives up by the shipyards. I'm going to vote for these people, and I think we better support these waterways. They're valuable institutions.
Yeah, I agree with you, Dick.
Have a good day.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the call. Just for those of you who didn't hear it, we played at the beginning of the first hour. This is Bernie Sanders in Congress the day before yesterday, asking one of these guys, come on, give me the story. Well, here, I'll let you in Bernie's own words.
Here's my question. According to the 9/11 Commission, UAE top officials and royal family members associated with Osama bin Laden. Can you tell us absolutely that these very same people will not be running six major American ports in the United States? Can you tell me that?
I will pledge to get that information back to you, Mr. Sands.
All right. Can anybody else tell me that we will know for a fact that some of these very same officials will not be running this company? I'm not hearing it. And to my mind, it is beyond comprehension that if you cannot answer that simple question, I cannot understand why we would go through with this transaction.
There you go. And by the way, for more information, Bernie.org, if you want to check out Bernie Sanders' website. 1-866-440-8466, our phone number. Alice in Humboldt County, California. Hey, Alice, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom.
Hello, Alice.
You are not being fair to you or other liberal talk shows. I never hear you trying to twist the truth, and that is all the right does. Do you think any of them would allow Richard Polanski to speak his views on one of their shows? They lie, and you guys don't.
Well, bless you, Alice. Thank you. I appreciate your kind words. Thank you very much for the call.
Okay.
Great to hear from you. Mary Beth in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Mary Beth, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
I'm fine. What's up?
Well, I'm one of the plaintiffs. In fact, I'm the lead plaintiff in a lawsuit that was filed in Westmoreland County, Pennsylvania. It was on the issue of the voting machines. Our Pennsylvania state constitution said that we have a right as voters and citizens to approve any voting system, particularly electronic voting systems, that are going to be installed in our counties. So a group of 11 of us, including one of our state senators, sued the county. Our Department of State was enjoined, and it ended up in Commonwealth Court, where we won.
Good on you.
The Commonwealth Court said we have the right to this referendum.
Mm-hmm.
On Wednesday, it was appealed, and we ended up in the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court. And with less than 24 hours deliberation, the justices ruled against us. They have vacated the Commonwealth Court judgment, and we're awaiting their opinion. We don't know exactly what this means, but basically the counties are moving ahead to buy electronic voting machines in Pennsylvania, many of them paperless, it's a serious situation.
What you are seeing, Mary Beth, is the fruit of a 25-year effort with the Federalist Society and the right-wing reactionaries to stack our courts. I'm telling you, it is. I mean, perhaps there's some rationality to this judgment, But increasingly, we are finding that our courts are being stacked, all including the Supreme Court, most recently with Roberts and Alito.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this attempt to completely change the referees for the game. If you can't change the rules of the game, then you change the referees, and because they're going to enforce the rules differently.
But in this case, it's also they're being complicit with the Help America Vote Act. They want that money.
Yeah.
The state wants that money, and we believe it is very much a political decision. Again, not having seen the opinion, but it appears that because the Department of Justice is suing New York State, which is, of course, our neighbor to the north, and threatening to sue us any day, these states are sort of being browbeaten into complying and buying these paperless machines.
Not good. Mary Beth, thanks for the heads up.
Okay, thanks.
We'll stay on this story.
Please follow it, because it's really developing now as these states are it's coming down to the wire with the Help America Vote Act.
Well, we're seeing the same thing, actually, that just happened. And Mary Beth, thanks for the call. We're seeing the exact same thing that just happened in Vermont. I mean, this is here's the headline in the Associated Press. This is LA Times, Washington Post News Service. Court cooled to Vermont campaign reforms. Vermont has passed basically a law that would ensure that elections are relatively clean. And John Roberts, now the Chief Justice, a guy who made his living as a corporate attorney, by and large, working on behalf of big multinational corporations and millionaires and billionaires, himself making millions of dollars a year as a lawyer, he says, he's asking questions. Robert said he was not convinced that Vermont had the right to have this kind of a law. He says, I assume if they think the candidate can be bought, they would act accordingly at the polls. Don't reelect that candidate. And if a candidate comes in with millions of dollars and buys all kinds of ads, just see right through that. Everybody can just see right through that, right? Well, in John Roberts' world, 45 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
When my creditors are screaming for their dough, I'll be proud to tell them all where they can go. They won't have to scream and holler. They'll be paid to the last dollar, where the endless streams of money seem to flow. I'll be glad to tell them all what they can do. It's a matter of a simple form or two. It's not just remuneration, it's a liberal education. Ain't you kinda glad that I'm in debt to you? 'Cause I'm changing my name to Chrysler. I'm going down to Washington, D.C.
And welcome back, my friends. Broadcasting from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone here in the People's Republic of Portland, Oregon. Tom Hartman here with you. 51 minutes past the hour, and welcome back to our program, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Brian in Los Angeles, California. Hey, Brian, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, great show. I wanted to talk about a piece written by Joshua Frank. It appeared yesterday in opednews.com.
Mm-hmm.
It talks about Senator Dianne Feinstein, who's my representative here in California.
She's one of your two senators.
Yes. Richard Bloom is her husband. And the gist of the article is that he is the acting director of a company called URS, which is a major U.S. Military contractor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in 2002, URS bought another contractor, military contractor, called EG&G from the Carlyle Group. And in that deal, Carlyle became a 21% holder, thank you, of URS. So now we have the Carlyle Group and Bloom as primary owners of URS.
So Dianne Feinstein's husband is in business partnership with the Carlyle Group.
Yes, sir. So Carlyle owns 21%, Bloom Capital owns 23% of URS.
Yeah.
Now they turn around and then at this point EG&G goes out and gets a $600 million defense contract, and URS's stock price triples. So now we have Bloom with this cash. He's already a very wealthy man. But he turns around and is giving the Democratic National Committee and various Democratic candidates campaign cash.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, doesn't something like this go a long way to explaining why people like Senator Feinstein are not standing up on a daily basis screaming bloody murder about what we're doing in the Middle East?
Yeah. Well, you know, I can't speak to the details of this, Brian, because I haven't read the article. I've known that Dianne Feinstein's husband was some kind of big-shot, wealthy businessman, but and that there was some affiliation with the defense industry. But beyond that, I didn't know the details. So,
well, folks should go ahead and take a look at opednews.com, and actually, the gentleman's name, by Joshua Frank, has his own website. It's called brickburner.org,
yeah,
where they originally appeared. Go ahead and take a look at it, and we should be doing our own research and finding out, if do some fact-checking.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
I think it's amazing.
I don't disagree. On the other hand, when Bill Clinton was running for president, there were people yelling that Hillary for 6 years was on the board of Walmart, and therefore Bill shouldn't be able to run for president. I'm not sure that necessarily, because Dianne Feinstein's husband is doing this kind of business, that she's... that means anything about her.
It doesn't necessarily make her ineligible to hold her position, but it does start to call into question her motivations for why she, for some strange reason, doesn't seem to be as aggressive against our policies in the Middle East as one might hope.
Oh, it could be. Or it could be that effectively she's recusing herself from these things without saying it. I just don't know. But it's an interesting issue you raised, and I'm sure one that folks in California in particular are going to be watching. Brian, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. Bob in Flagstaff, Arizona. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
Yes, hi, Tom. I think just on the Bloom subject, I think he also has extensive business dealings in China, too.
Anyway,
I wanted to call about the port deal. Two things. I disagree with it. But what really gets me is the hypocrisy of many of the people who are currently supporting this. If you ask them, or if anybody asked them, if they would have supported John Kerry talking about this in the campaign, they would have been tripping over themselves criticizing him.
What do you mean?
Pardon?
Well, you mean if John Kerry had been supporting this port deal? Oh, if John Kerry had been supporting a deal like this during the campaign, they would have come down on him like a ton of bricks. Are you kidding?
And that shows the hypocrisy of these supporters.
Oh, well, Bob, it's taken you this long to figure out these guys are hypocrites?
No, it hasn't. I'm just pointing it out.
Yeah, okay. Well,
another thing that really gets me is that the press keeps talking about the Clintons being on both sides of the deal.
Yeah.
And even when there's a Democratic or a liberal person in the discussion, they don't point out that the Doles are in the exact same position.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yes, you're absolutely right. Bob, thanks a lot for the call. It's a good point that you make. 1-866-440-8466, our number. Bill in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Tom, your show is great, but it's getting better every day.
Well, thank you, Bill. That's our goal. We really work on it.
Tom, I've really barely raised a collective national eyebrow, but a couple years ago now, just after the fall of Baghdad, Bush sent the Bush family consigliere to Baghdad, James Baker, to dispense of matters regarding debt incurred by Saddam.
Right.
And incredibly. The only party that got paid 100% face value and right off the top was the Carlyle Group.
Yeah, what a surprise.
I believe it was $1 billion. I've been waiting for more study or investigation about this, and I haven't heard a thing. I'm just wondering if you know of anything that's coming down the pipeline.
No, and there won't be anything coming down the pipeline as long as the Republicans control the House and the Senate, because they literally control the ability of either of those bodies to do any kind of investigation, to have the power of the subpoena, to compel witnesses to testify. And that's why no investigation has been done, nor will be done, until or unless Democrats can take control of either the House or the Senate or both. So, Bill, you and I got to get politically active. You with me?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you, and thanks for listening to Talk 1090 there in Seattle. I mean, this is, if there ever was a time, if there ever was a time in our lifetimes, my friends, for us to be getting politically active, for us to join political parties, to get together, to join organizations like Democracy for America, whether it's joining the Greens, whether it's joining the Democratic Party, whether it's joining the Republican Party. Get out there, get involved, get active, because we've got to take this country back.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Wow.
rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. The radio support group of, by, and for we the people of the United States of America. Ah, yes, it's our outsourcing alert. I actually really like this music. I picked this up on a trip to Beijing. It's from a Chinese opera. And these are like slaves on a slave ship. And it's a song about this girl who's in love with this guy on the ship, and he's having to ship out and all this stuff. More than you wanted to know for bumper music. Anyhow, it's our globalization alert. George W. Bush, earlier today or yesterday, depending on what part of the world you're in, people do lose jobs as a result of globalization, and it's painful for those who lose jobs, he said to a meeting of young entrepreneurs at Hyderabad's Indian School of Business. Nonetheless, he said, globalization provides great opportunities. Well, of course, he was speaking before a group of Indians. And great opportunities for the Chinese as well. Two fastest growing economies in the world now because our jobs are going there. Speaking of which, the selling off of America, a unit of Conoco Oil and Gas Limited of Calgary, Alberta, will pay $55 million for HollyCorp's small Montana oil refinery. The cash and stock deal for Montana Refining's 8,000-barrel-per-day facility is set to close by April 1st, including related assets in Great Falls, Montana. Upon closing, Dallas-based Holly will operate a 75,000-barrel-per-day refinery located in Artesia, New Mexico, all owned by people outside the United States. In the meantime, you'll want to know that while our homeland is being sold off piece by piece because we are pursuing insane trade policies that are causing us to be $700 billion a year in debt to the rest of the world. What is that? That's in the neighborhood of $2 billion a day. Well, $2 billion a day of our country has to be sold off to pay that debt. So we're getting all this. Now, that doesn't seem to concern the Department of Homeland Security. However, what they're concerned about is a guy named George Barish. George was the president of the United Commercial Fishermen's Association down in New Orleans. His extended family lost 14 of its 17 houses in St. Bernard, Louisiana. He had five fishing boats. Two of them survived, but they're in a canal filled with debris and silt that can't be used. Three of them vanished. Doesn't have enough cash to rebuild his oyster beds. He is out of luck, out of work, and homeless. And so, you know, making the best of a bad situation, he created a couple of T-shirts. Flooded by Katrina, forgotten by FEMA. And he's been selling these things in New Orleans to the tourists, making a little money on the side. And FEMA came to town to pass out some food, and so he went down to give away some of these T-shirts to some of the FEMA victims. After all, they're the FEMA victims. He figured they deserved a free T-shirt. Giving them away. And what happens? Six agents of the Department of Homeland Security surround him and say that he is in violation of the law. This is USA Today, Laura Parker's article. He was cited by a group of Homeland Security officials for selling a T-shirt on federal property. Now, they say he was selling it, right? He says he was giving it away. In this case, near a FEMA center in the parking lot of a Walmart in Chalamet, Louisiana. Barish says he was ticketed after six DHS officers gathered at his truck. He says he was told he would be arrested if he didn't take the ticket. I said, do you really want to arrest me? And am I the only one here who thinks this is asinine? You're harassing a person who just lost everything? Well, of course we are, they said. We're with the Bush administration. No, that's not in the story. I just added that. Barish's extended family, as I said, lost 14 of its 17 homes. He says he's going to fight this ticket. It's a $75 ticket they hit him with, right? He's going to fight it because he says if you do something wrong, you pay for it. But if you didn't, you don't ever say you did. There you go. Good on you. Good on you. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Gene in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Gene, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom.
Hey, Gene.
I'm one of your grateful members of the radio support group with the Tom Hartman Show.
Of, by, and for we the people of the United States of America. Thank you, Gene.
Amen to that. I'm an 80-year-old radical that is so upset with what they have been doing to my dear, dear country.
Yeah. What was it like living under previous Republicans and previous Democrats, Gene? Your memory goes back farther than mine.
It was possible for people to shake hands and negotiate a deal and come out with something that made sense to the people. That doesn't seem to be possible anymore. Not since the election of 94.
Yeah. I remember Everett Dirksen back in the 60s and 70s being the conservative conscience of the Senate.
Yes.
You know, a good guy, an incredibly deep voice.
And a good friend with Lyndon Johnson.
That's right. These guys, they would go out, they'd have dinner together, and here you've got probably the most conservative member of the Senate, the most liberal president that we had seen since Franklin Roosevelt, and these guys could sit down over a meal and did regularly and talk about what's going on. This, I think what we're seeing here, Gene, is the result of this absolute take no holds, you know, take no prisoners form of politics, and it's extremely destructive to the United States.
Well, one of the things that's most distressing to me is the fear that voting won't count, that our votes won't add up to the actual representation of what the people want, that we can't trust the voting process any longer with what went on in Ohio and Florida and numerous other states, and the blasphemy of having a corporation control the results of these machine voting processes.
This is the true felony against democracy. I mean, if privatizing the concession stands at Yellowstone, that's not good, but that's not a felony against democracy. That's a misdemeanor. But privatizing our vote, the beating heart of our democracy, that's a felony.
And that's what scares me most.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what we can do about it.
Well, what we can do is we can keep speaking out. We can, every single politician that you talk with, you can say, this is an issue for me, this may be the issue for me, and I believe that in this election, if enough of us get active, even if they rig the machines, even if they throw people off the voter rolls, it's just going to be so conspicuous, so obvious that the Democrats won that it can't be denied.
Well, I certainly hope so. There was one other thing I wanted to ask, a favor. I heard frequently one of the musical pieces that you use as a, I guess you call it a bumper.
Mm-hmm, bumper music.
But I haven't heard it recently. It's a country singer. I don't know his name, but the song is I'm Taking My Country Back.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You keep, you know, that's almost your your call to all of us.
Yes, I agree.
Get active in taking our country back.
I agree, Gene.
I'd like to suggest you make that your theme song.
Okay. Well, I'd have to track these folks down and get their permission, but I do play it from time to time, and in fact, we've got to take a break in about a minute and a half, but when we get back from that break, just for you, I will play that song.
Oh, thank you.
It's from the Honky Tonkers for Truth, and it's just a marvelous piece of music. Gene, I got to move along before we take this break, okay?
Thanks
a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. Karen in Morgan Hill, California. Hey, Karen, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I called you earlier this week about the bill H.R. 4167 that was to repeal the food labeling laws.
Yes.
And we were fortunate enough to have them delay it for a week. So March 8th is a new target date. But, for example, what the bill would do is preempt, like, Alaska's newly passed law to label genetically engineered fish. That's just one of the laws, so it's a really important law for people to get involved and let your Congress people know we don't want this.
Yes, this so-called food labeling law would wipe out over 100 state laws that protect consumers in various states around the United States.
It's crazy. It's crazy. And coincidentally, there's one other cause. I was gifted with a website that is womensaynotowar.org.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just how it sounds, plural. WomenSayNoToWar.org, and it's women from all over the world, Iraqi women, coming together in a spirit of peace. And just because we've had enough of a senseless war in Iraq and a cruel attacks on civilians around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a petition that can be signed on that day, and I feel that actually that is one of the most pressing issues of our time is peace. And also, if people weren't eating such poisoned foods, they would pay more attention to what's going on in the world around them.
There you go. And all the more reason for us to know what's in our food, which is why people should be calling 1-888-355-3588 and ask for their member of Congress and say, stop this food, this so-called food labeling bill, which actually is an anti-food labeling bill. Karen, thanks a lot for the call and for bringing these issues up and keeping them at the front of our consciousness. Much appreciated. 16 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman. We'll be back with Taking Your Country Back.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And I'm taking my country back. Son, you ain't been doing her right. Oh, I've been watching you and I don't like how you've been treating my stars and stripes. You took our jobs and sent them overseas. Now we owe billions to the red Chinese. Blew the budget and you lost Iraq. So I'm taking my country.
That's Tony Stampley there, my friends.
We had a bundle in the treasury drawer, more than there had ever been before. But every day we're drowning deeper in debt. Maybe 4 years should be all you get.
On our dreams.
And you gave tax breaks to the millionaires. And you tried to make the working man pay. But you can't tax a man when his job's not there. Now look at where we are today. Hey, I'm taking my country.
And this is what we need to do, my friends. We've got to get politically active out there.
I've been watching you and I don't like how you've been treating my stars and stripes. For me, the Saudis treat you like you're royalty. You blew the budget and you lost Iraq. Now I'm taking my country back. Now I can understand why you were hot. Cause Bin Laden never did get caught. So you said we had Saddam to blame. Tried to tell us it was all the same. But now the years roll by and our kids keep dying. You don't even have a plan to bring them home. Those WMD you promised on TV. Hey, admit it, you figured it wrong. So I'm taking my time.
It's Tony Stampley with the Honky Tonkers for Truth. There's a bunch of good studio musicians who put together this thing just before the 2004 election. It's absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Now you don't know my name, but you know who I am. I'm your everyday work hard, play hard, raise kids and pray hard, common man. And Lord knows I love this land.
Welcome back, my friends. 24 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program for your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. And that song by request, boy, this is back to my days as a DJ back in 1968. Yes, by request from Gene in Seattle, Taking My Country Back. Jeffrey Kleinman is with us with DVDTalk.com. Hey, Jeffrey, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going?
I am great. You've got some hot new DVDs that you're discussing over at DVDTalk.com. Dog Day Afternoon is out now?
Yeah, it's a special edition of Sidney Lumet's great film, which looks at how, basically a 10-minute robbery turns into this 8-hour-long ordeal because of the media circus that comes around it. Kind of sound familiar?
Yeah.
Kind of things happening.
And so, Al Pacino in that thing, too.
Yeah, Al Pacino's in it, and he's fantastic, and, you know, it's great. It's amazing seeing a film like this that was done so many years ago and how it is so applicable to now.
Yeah, now the other one that just came out is...
You've got to say, I'm a human being. My life has value.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Right.
Sounds like a foul cry there, doesn't it?
There you go. I'm tossing that one to you, Jeffrey.
Yeah, I mean, this is Network, and that's Peter Finch yelling and mad as hell, and he's not going to take it anymore, and I know we all kind of have felt like that. But the great thing about this film is, you know, it looks at the networks and the media and what they'll do. And, you know, to think of this was imagined in a world when Fox News was just a twinkle in somebody's eye.
Yeah.
And how basically networks can sensationalize things.
This movie, people have to watch this movie. I mean, you've got to see Network today, because even if you saw it back before, because your jaw is going to drop. And finally, The Untold Story of Emmett Lewis Till is coming out.
Yeah, this is a great documentary. It takes a look at really the genesis of the civil rights movement. Emmett Lewis Till was a 14-year-old boy who went down the Mississippi Delta to visit family and then whistled at a white woman. And that was pretty much the beginning of the end for his life. And he was brutally murdered. And then the way in which the whole case went around to expedite the innocence of the people who then later confessed. Great thing about this movie is it really opened doors, and last year they opened up the case again and said, no, we're gonna pursue justice.
The whole campaign to reopen the case of Emmett Till was pushed by the director of this movie, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
Keith Bocamp? Yeah.
Shows the power of film.
Yeah, it is. It really is. Jeffrey Kleinman, the editor of DVD Talk, an online magazine available at www.dvdtalk.com. Jeffrey, thank you for being with us today.
Great, thanks.
Always great having you with us. 27 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman radio program, where we run rings around the right wing 5 days a week, 3 hours a day.
Listening to the Tom Hartman program.
The company of strangers who worship machines and steal all their dreams. It's a strange old world. Shoot out on the boulevard.
And welcome back, my friends. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you. Michael Chertoff's resignation now being called for by Brownie. Michael Brown, not quite happy with how everything worked out. We'll be sharing a little more about that with you as the program progresses. In the meantime, Bush putting his foot in his mouth, open the mouth, insert foot, Mr. Bush. Here it is, George W. Bush. He says, as he's leaving India, he says, I believe that a prosperous, democratic Pakistan. Now, keep in mind, this is a country that was democratic until the current leader overthrew the democratically elected government in a military coup. The guy's a military dictator. He's a military strongman. Musharraf, whose name, by the way, George Bush could not pronounce, did not know, in fact, in 2000 during the campaign. Question, can you name the general who's in charge of Pakistan? Bush. Wait, is this 50 questions? Question. No, it's 4 questions of 4 leaders and 4 hotspots. Bush, the new Pakistani general, he's just been elected. No, not elected. This guy just took over office. It appears that this guy is, you know, he's blithering, right? So anyhow, Bush... Today, he says, I believe that a prosperous, democratic Pakistan, again, it's not democratic, will be a steadfast partner for America, a peaceful neighbor for India, and a force for freedom and moderation in the Arab world. Nobody bothered to tell George Bush that Pakistan has no Arabs. It's not part of the Arabian Peninsula. The people in Pakistan don't consider themselves Arabs. They are not Arabs. They are Pakistanis, you know, a different ethnic group. In any case, you know, part of the Indian subcontinent. Later, White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan told reporters that Bush meant to say, this is always, you know, the little cleanup operations, that Bush meant to say Pakistan would be a force for freedom and moderation in the Muslim world. Pakistan is not an Arab country. Yeah, but it certainly is part of the Muslim. Yeah, so, you know, George Bush slowly picking it up, step by step. 1-866-440-8466, 440-THOM, our telephone number. And let's see here, Larry in Seattle, Washington on the line. Hey, Larry, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, how are you doing today?
I'm great, but I'll get better, Larry.
Excellent. While everybody's maintaining focus on domestic issues that have been broadcast quite heavily and Bush's trip to the Pakistan and India, something else is going on around the corner in the region of China and Taiwan. I don't know if you saw Lou Dobbs last week, but he showed some satellite images of the of China and its coastline and some man-made tunnels that they've built that are large enough to float aircraft carriers into to load up weapons.
Yeah, I didn't see that on Lou Dobbs, but I've read about it in other places. And China, you know, you had this Chinese general about, what, 5-6 months ago who said that they could take out 100 American cities with nukes if we tried to stop them from taking back Taiwan.
Okay, and Taiwan.
And he was never disavowed, by the way, by the leaders of China.
Right. The president of Taiwan is Chen Shui-bian, and he has just scrapped their Unification Council,
right,
which was developed back in 2000, or excuse me, 1990, when it was ruled by one party. And if you remember, President Chen was elected on a sympathy vote because of a supposed assassination attempt on him.
Mm-hmm.
His standing has gone down, so he said that because China is building up this huge military, there's no reason to think that there's going to be unification, so he's scrapping this council. But China, on the other hand, has said this is a extreme provocation.
Right.
The United States has said, no, we don't want you to do that, but they're accepting that they have. So there's a region of the world that may need India as a bulwark against that, using their nuclear prowess as a counterweight to China's nuclear power.
You know, it could be, if you're thinking in kind of Kissinger terms, Larry, I think that you make a point. But here's the thing. China right now has the ability to destroy the United States of America without ever using a nuclear weapon. All they would have to do is stop buying our debt and sell all the nearly $1 trillion worth of treasuries that they are holding below market value on the open markets. And it would throw the United States into such a severe depression that the 1930s would look like a picnic. I mean, they
right.
literally could wipe us out overnight. And they know that, and they know that we know that, and they know that we know that. And so, frankly, I think that the probability is very high that China will try to take back Taiwan.
Well,
I think it's
the United States is attempting to manipulate China by telling them that they need to start using their monetary force and put it onto the global market
right.
more balanced.
Well, what we're trying to do is get them to increase the value of the yuan, you know, but we're talking about a 40% increase, and they're talking about 0.4% over the last year and saying that isn't that wonderful progress. Bottom line is China's going to do what's best for China. These, you know, the Chinese, I wrote about this in my book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. I lived over there for about a month and a half in 1986 and in Beijing. And I'm telling you, they take the long view. They think in terms of, literally, they think in terms of centuries and millennia. And they have been organizing this thing. I mean, you know, the United States basically, starting with Reagan and then Bush and then Clinton, we started saying, hey, you guys want to take over our country economically? We'll let you do that. And they're going, oh, this is cool.
Yes, and their government leaders are as out of touch with their public as our political leaders are out of touch with our public.
Well, that's the only thing we have to hope for, and that is that, frankly, their growing middle class will start pushing for democracy, for more democracy. They're actually getting a little bit of it here and there, and that the Internet will open it up. But I don't know if you noticed the story that just has been percolating around the edges of the web over the last 2 days, that China is now talking about creating their own Internet. And
yes,
just
but, as long as there's satellites and as long as there's telephone lines connecting us, there will be a way to get the information through.
Oh, yeah, I suspect so. But will it reach that critical mass? That's the big question. You know, will there be enough people in China who get that information that critical mass is reached where they say, oh, yeah, okay, we're not going to go along with this government anymore. I mean, keep in mind, this is a government that's still to this day is executing people for speaking out against the government.
They have a lot of peasants coming into the city with nothing to do.
Yeah, yeah, they do. So, in any case, my take on this, Larry, is that they are going to go for Taiwan. It's probably going to be in the next couple of years. They'll probably do it while we're engaged elsewhere. For example, if we try to attack Iran. And that we won't do anything about it, even though we've given Taiwan all these assurances, just like Bush Sr. gave the Shia in southern Iraq all those assurances in 1991 that if they rose up against Saddam, we'd be there to help. They did. We weren't. And Saddam put down that uprising, you know, brutally by killing thousands of people, perhaps tens of thousands of people.
And they did that same thing in Tiananmen Square. So
you're right.
That example.
You're right. You're right. So, but I'm frankly, I am more. Afraid is the wrong word. Concerned about, they have a higher level of certainty that the threat to us from China is now economic, not military, even though they are building a huge military machine. The Japanese are the ones who are really starting to worry about China's military machine, and frankly, the Indians as well. And because China is talking about, you know, let's divide the world into two spheres of influence. And oddly enough, They're not including the United States in that. It's basically, you know, the Western European sphere of influence and the Sino-Chinese, you know, the Russian and Chinese sphere of influence, which would include all the way down into Japan. And then Australia would become part of the British sphere of influence. It's the talk coming out of China is positively spooky.
Get off your credit cards and pay your mortgage down.
You bet. You bet.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. John in Anchorage, Alaska, KUDO. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
I just came up with an idea about a month ago about I was listening to your show and trying to come up with ideas for the reasons originally for the Iraq War, and had this thought that it what if it was like a kind of a cover for a robbery of a sense of you know, all the nine, I'm thinking about the nine plus billion that's missing and looking at that
in Iraq,
like,
you mean.
Election cycles and how little they cost, and what if it was like a neocon looting of this country and looting of our dollars that were sent over there in cash.
May well be. There is somewhere between $8 and $9 billion in actual physical $100 bill cash missing from Iraq right now. Nobody knows where it is. But here's an even more mind-boggling number, John. In 1999, the Pentagon reported that they were missing $1 trillion. That's $1,000 billion. Or $1 million. And then in 2002, the Pentagon reported that they were missing an additional $2.2 trillion. So we've got a total of $3.2 trillion that the Pentagon can't account for.
And when you look at that and you look at, what's an election cycle cost? I mean, $500 million or something like that.
They're getting more expensive.
They could fund their agenda for generations. And maybe when Bush came in and said mission accomplished, he meant that the looting mission was accomplished or whatever. The original intent was to, I think it probably got out of hand as far as they didn't expect it to fall apart the way it did. But.
John, I sure hope you're wrong. I sure hope you're wrong. But, it's like I'm not wearing a tinfoil hat, and I won't rule that out. I just have to say, it's with this bunch, anything is possible. 45 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's coming through a hole in the air from the
Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
Indeed, my friends, welcome back. 9 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. And Leonard Cohen, from your lips to God's ears, democracy, even though he's Canadian, democracy coming to the United States of America. And it's only going to happen if we get active between now and November, if we turn out in such overwhelming numbers, if we get people involved in such overwhelming numbers, if we work aggressively and actively to take back our election system, our electoral system, from the private corporations that have snatched it. In the midst of all this, in the midst of all this, as Agence France-Presse reported today, of all places, right? I mean, this is the Europeans are reporting on this. U.S. military officers breaking with domestic and international legal precedent. In other words, this is stuff that the Hague Conventions and the a whole series of international treaties have forbidden forever. I mean, this is the stuff that the Nazis were prosecuted for with regard to war crimes. U.S. military officers breaking with domestic and international legal precedent said that the War on Terror military tribunals at the Guantanamo Naval Base could allow evidence obtained through torture. Remember when John Yoo was being interrogated before Congress and he said, if you want to get some information and you bring that person's child in and crush his testicles in front of him, we'd consider that. The president might consider that.
If the president deems that he's got to torture somebody, including by crushing the testicles of the person's child, there is no law that can stop that. No treaty. And also no law by Congress. That's what you wrote in the August 2002 memo.
I think it depends on why the president thinks he needs to do that.
It all depends on why the president thinks he needs to do that. Well, see, this is a rogue state. I'm sorry. We have become an international pariah. The United States of America, I never thought I'd live to see the day, but the United States of America, you know, and those people marched to their, many of them to their deaths in Tiananmen Square, many, many of them to their imprisonment, thousands, tens of thousands of people marching right into those tanks, carrying a 36-foot-tall papier-mâché statue, a replica of the Statue of Liberty, that they renamed the Goddess of Liberty, quoting Thomas Paine and Thomas Jefferson, believing that America was the country that stood for democracy and freedom and principles of high moral values, and that we would never stoop to doing what the communist Chinese dictatorship was doing. We were the beacon for the world until this bunch came along. The day after 9/11, they were having candlelight vigils going on in Tehran, Iran, that were you know, just we're in solidarity with you. The whole world was in solidarity with us. The Islamic world was saying, "Oh, there are crazy people among us. They've gone nuts. We don't go along with that. We're not in support of Saddam Hussein." If George Bush had simply done the same thing, excuse me, I said Saddam Hussein. There, see, he did it to me too, Osama bin Laden. If George Bush had done the same thing with Osama bin Laden that Bill Clinton did with Tim McVeigh and simply said, this guy is a criminal, he has created a heinous act, we are going to bring him to justice, and we need the police forces of the world to help us. We would have had it, we could have done it. The Taliban was willing to turn Osama bin Laden over to us or to a third country where he could stand trial for crimes against humanity. And if there was the evidence, he would be in prison right now. But no, George wanted to have his war. The victims of the Oklahoma City bombing, they got closure. Tim McVeigh had read the Turner Diaries. He had read this novel in which the good white Christians blow up a federal building and it causes a hyper-reaction on the part of the American government, where they take away everybody's guns and they clamp down on people. And as a consequence of that clampdown, all the good white Christians stood up and said, that's it, we're taking our country. And they went off and they had orgies of murder against people of color and people and the Jews and the Muslims and just and the only people left standing in the end of the book, of the novel, The Turner Diaries, Tim McVeigh's Bible. The only people left standing were the good white Christians, the Protestant Christians, I might add. And Bill Clinton did not feed that machine. He did not turn Tim McVeigh into some sort of super evil superhero. But George Bush was so bad, he was totally tanked in the polls. Everybody knew he wasn't elected president. Everybody knew he was an illegitimate president and an incompetent one at that. And so here was his opportunity. I mean, you can't have a Superman without Lex Luthor. Otherwise, it's boring. You got to have a super evil in order for there to be super good. And so for George W. Bush to portray himself as good, he had to say, oh, there's super evil out there in the world. And sure enough, there was a bad guy. But this was not the way to take him out. And now we're continuing with this. Brownback's comments are sure to reinforce concerns. This is from the AFP article. Sure to reinforce concerns about how the U.S. government treats and prosecutes detainees held as part of the war on terror. This has to do with the trial of only 10 people out of the 500 down in Guantanamo who are actually having trials against them. And on top of that now, Newsweek reporting that faced with a losing war against Salvadoran rebels, the U.S. government funded or supported nationalist forces, that maybe the Salvador option is coming. That was Negroponte. I'll tell you about that when we come back on Monday. Where this thing is going is absolutely spooky. Coming up on the next Tom Hartman program, Rabbi Michael Lerner says there's a network of spiritual progressives who aim to challenge the misuse of God. Tune in for that. And special thanks to my producer, David Poole, to Louise Hartman, Alex Goldmark, and Dan Jacobs at Air America, Ben and Shelby, Sue Nethercutt, Mike Toth. Thanks you.
You've
thank
been
you
listening
all.
To the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
And have a great weekend, my friends. We'll see you on Monday.